BFM Market Update with MoneyWeb.
I'm Simon Brown. This is SAFM Market Update Budget Special Broadcast. I've got a couple of guests on the line. I'm going to do a quick touch base with each of them to get their expectation. Then we'll be back after 3 o'clock. Sandile Zulu, President, Black Business Council. Sir, appreciate your time today. Let's kick off with you. Business has probably got a giant wish list from the 2021 budget from Minister Mboweni. What would you put top of that list expectation-wise, just as we're waiting for him to start speaking?
Okay, just a brief correction. I'm Sandile Zungu, president of the Black Business Council.
Sorry, Mike. My bad.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me here. We know that the Minister of Finance is in a very tight corner from a fiscal point of view. Revenue collection in the prior year has been dismal, COVID-related and other factors. So the focus has got to be clearly on how to auction the spectrum. It's a big ticket item, but it's not only going to bring money to the fiscal, but also it will unlock the child space to facilitate the fourth industrial revolution. So we have huge expectations around what the minister is going to take.
We'll leave that there. Let's quickly pop over to Davie Root, as I'm keeping an eye on Parliament to see when the Minister is coming in. Davie Root, Chief Economist, Efficient Group. Davie, I mean, is there any... Obviously, one of the big points of last year was that we officially got downgraded to full junk status as a country. Is there much that the Finance Minister can say today that can, I mean, maybe get us on the right track to one day getting back to investment grade?
Yeah, just by the way, I listened to some comments about people wishing for a cut in taxes. That's just not going to happen. Maybe the best case scenario is going to postpone some significant tax increases, but tax cuts, forget about that. There certainly will be tax increases. The question is how much. Yes, the only answer to what the Minister of Finance can do, really the only answer, is he must cut back on state spending. We've had a number of downgrades, you're absolutely correct. We're probably going to see further downgrades as the fiscal deficit simply gets out of hand, like what we've seen recently, the last couple of years, and it's not only the last year, it's been going on for many, many years, and the state debt levels have become... reach levels that's become completely and totally unsustainable. So the only answer is to cut back on state spending. But that's a difficult thing politically, because there are basically only one place where you can cut state spending, and that is to spend less money on people. And that means, amongst others, that we have to cut back on the wage bill, and cutting back on the wage bill, we know what's going on in Cape Town at the moment with the strikes and so on that's going on there. So, but that is the only answer. We have to cut back on state spending, and that is politically the difficult thing to do.
Especially in an election year. I think cutting back, I mean, it's always difficult to cut back on state spending. Cutting back in an election year, I'm not sure. I mean, maybe the national elections, the local elections rather, get passed over to 2020. 22, but they are certainly due this year. My third guest this afternoon, sitting in studio with me, CEO of BTMT Capital, Mr. Mgletshe. Your take on budget. I mean, Davie Root just said we're not going to get tax cuts. The short answer is it's going to be, I think, a really tough budget, and we're almost going to be looking for sort of, you know, highlights from what's really going to be a tough one. And we came into it, you know, last year ahead of pandemic, we came in a recession. Pandemic has only made the minister's job a lot harder.
It has, you know, but when you look at our economy, we had stagnant economic growth even before pandemic, and we have increasing debts, we have increasing unemployment. So these issues that we are facing, I think we have to look at closing the deficits, because our GDP is constantly below the debts that we have. So therefore, I'm looking at him trying to maybe articulate ways of reducing this debt, mm-hmm. right? And perhaps cutting this spending on public sector wage bill. And also, he had mentioned during the medium term budget that he was looking into increasing revenues, tax revenues for about 40 billion rands. So now it's time for him to explain to us, you know, as to how he's going to go about getting that 40 billion rands.
And that's a great point. He made a promise to us. He stood up in Parliament and said so. And I remember after the budget of February last year, I thought a really, really good budget there. But there were some promises there that were going to be hard to keep. And in truth, we never got to him really having to, for the simple reason that the pandemic came along. But it's not easy to stand in Parliament, but we want to actually see the action. And it's, I suppose, what happens post this in terms of the deliverable on the budget. In a sense, it's going to take the cluster. It's the finance minister's the point person, but it's also SARS. It's other institutions of state at the same time who need to help facilitate and make it happen.
That's 100%. But what I like, what I've seen now, SARS has improved a lot in tax collections. When you look at the third quarter of 2020, mm-hmm. So we already saw that there was an increase in pay-as-you-earn collections. You know, there was an increase in VAT collections. So that alone tells us that without increasing the tax base, but they have strengthened their controls. You know, so the wish is for them not to lose momentum post this COVID, to continue, you know, collecting for those who are not compliant. Yeah.
We're going to leave that there. I'm seeing that Minister Tito Mboweni is approaching the podium. Let's go back to studio in Johannesburg. We'll be back after the budget speech.
SAFM, setting the nationwide agenda daily. Daily.
I'm Simon Brown. This is the SAFM Market Update Budget Special Broadcast. I've got three guests with me. Darvi Root, Chief Economist at the Efficient Group. Bisisiwe Ngletsha, she's CEO BTMT Capital. And Sandile Zungu, who is President Black Business Council. Bisisiwe, let me come to you first in studio. If we're going to come back, we've got some time, but your highlight impression of the Minister's budget.
To me, Simon, it looks as if there are strong interventions. You know, so we therefore adopt these budgets under these difficult circumstances. What I like is he's not only talking about industrialization, but he's talking about implementation programs. You know, he's giving us feedback about the plans that they had last year in 2020. You know, when he touched on Operation Vulindlela, which was launched then, and he's talking about key structural reforms. You know, that progress update, it's something that we want rather than him dishing out the plans without understanding how far they are. You know, when he spoke about the economic reconstruction and recovery plan to intensify the participation of SMEs. That is what we need, because at the end of the day, we want to say everyone feels like this budget was talking to them, you know. And that update on presidential employment stimulus program, you know, I remember it was announced last year in April 2020, and when the president said they're looking at creating about 800,000 job opportunities, it sounded like a dream. But from what he's saying now, saying they've allocated about 100 billion rand towards that, you know, that's good, because then all we need to know is when we have the next budget speech, then he needs to update us that how many jobs have been created and how was that 100 billion rands utilized. So overall, I mean, the only thing which I didn't hear him touch, which I was looking forward to, was as part of this reconstruction and recovery plan, the president of the country had touched on projects that were going to sort of support women, whereby the government was going to support the public, you know, public procurement projects by buying from women-owned businesses.
Yeah, that's right. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
So without having these women fronting, because, you know, with some existing businesses, they would get, you know, a woman just to front so that they could get these businesses. So women should stand up and say, if you want me to be part of the business, I must attend board meetings, I must be part of the ESCO, I must know what is happening in the shareholders' meeting. So at least if we could get an update on that. But otherwise, I think the budget was well-crafted.
So. It's certainly my sense. Sandile Zungu, President, Black Business Council. Your sort of highlight view of the budget as we've sort of finished listening to Minister Mboweni taking us through it. Sandile, what's your key takeaways?
Well, the budget was presented eloquently. Mm-hmm. We've come to expect the ministers to do just that.
But the fact of the matter is that the times are really tough. And I do get worried that the can is being kicked down the road. The stabilization of finances is moving to 2-3 years further down the road. In an environment where there's so much uncertainty, to talk about stability beyond the immediate short term, which is well within his immediate sphere of influence, it introduces uncertainty. You know, I think as a country, we are hugely indebted. And the fact we cannot run away from the that we cannot run away from is that you know, most of the expenditure is going towards interest payments. We're not investing in infrastructure. We're not investing in the future productive capacity of this economy as we should. Those are realities that, in my opinion, cannot be sweet talked and papered over by an eloquence of the speech. There are certain beautiful things that you know, sound like sweet music to my ears, especially representing my constituents in the Black Business Council. When the minister does commit to allocating resources towards the tourism recovery efforts in that they call it Tourism Equity Fund, we love that because the tourism sector, which is a major creator of entrepreneurial opportunities and a major employer of lowly skilled people, has been hit hard by COVID. And so a minister committing towards, you know, an allocation is hugely welcome. And talking about support for SME sector in general, we love that. And the focus on infrastructure, we love that. Because I think we are as equally interested on the, call it, social side of the expenditure, as we are interested in the economic side of the expenditure. What are we doing to invest in the future productive capacity of this economy? I think those three examples I've cited augur well for the future of the economy. But you know what? We are in deep, deep trouble. And I don't think that not just the Minister of Finance, but I don't think that the government has done sufficiently well towards orienting this economy in a direction that talks about, you know, reforms that will hugely inspire those with access to private capital to back this economy. This budget was not different from the point of view. It's not one of those which we'll call inflection point budgets.
Davi Root, Chief Economist at Efficient Group. I've got about a minute and a half before I go to news. What's your very highlight on the budget? I'll come back to you after the news. We can pick up more. But your 90-second highlight.
Okay, well, first of all, I think under very difficult circumstances, this is as close as you can get to the best the budget under these circumstances. And I'm referring specifically to the political constraints that the Minister of Finance is, that there are. If I have criticism, I think the Minister is too optimistic in terms of the forecast for economic growth, his revenue collection in this specific year. And I must say, I'm very, very surprised and very, very happily surprised with some adjustments as far as the taxes are concerned, but but I don't think you went far enough to cut the different other current expenditure items. That is we passed the point where we can be nice and gradually reduce certain expense items. We really have to lay in the axe, and I think you didn't go far enough. But still, having said that, I realize politically it's very difficult to do that. Under difficult circumstances, I give him quite a good mark for this.
year's budget.
Okay, and the market is liking it as well, as I'm checking. Our top 40 is up almost 1.5%. It was up about 1.3%. It picked up a bit. Banks leading the way, up 2.75%. Resources, 1.9%. Industrials, 0.75% green. The Rand really liked it. It touched 14.39. In fact, at one point, it's now trading 14.44. This time yesterday, 14.56. So it's picked up some 12 cents. But with that, let's go back to the SAFM studio for the news.
SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb.
I'm Simon Brown. This is the SAFM Market Update Budget Special Broadcasts. I have three experts helping me unpack the budget over the next hour. We've got Darby Root, Chief Economist from Efficient Group. Sindile Zunga, he is President, Black Business Council. And Bisisiwe Ngletshe, she is CEO of BTMT Capital. Darby, let me come back to you. You were saying just before we went to the news that the Treasury growth forecasts may be a little optimistic. And to quote the numbers, I mean, they were looking at 3.3% in 2021, off a massively low base. 2.2 for next year, that's up from 1.7% expected in October. And then for 23, 24, 1.6%. Those, I mean, you said they look a little optimistic. Certainly they're better than we've done in a long time. And a lot hinges on our ability to get those growth rates to make this budget work.
Indeed, because you can't collect taxes or enough taxes if the economy is simply not growing. And you're highlighting your news bulletin just now that refers to a better than expected collections when we talk about around about 100 billion rand or so. And I think that is one of the estimates that I disagree with the minister with. And let me just explain.
Mm-hmm.
The budget, remember the various, there are three major taxes. The one is personal income taxes, the most important one, followed by VAT, and followed by corporate taxes. Those are the three major taxes, and a couple of smaller ones as well. Those three taxes are doing better than expected, especially for November and December. But I believe there are a lot of reasons for that. Remember, each one of these taxes got a different seasonality in them. And I think, for example, that personal income taxes are doing certainly better than what we've expected up to now. But I do believe that the February and March numbers, for various reasons, are going to be under tremendous pressure. The same goes for VAT, and the same goes for company taxes. Although company taxes is slightly different, because company taxes are doing better because of this windfall, this mining company windfall that we're currently seeing because of commodity prices. But the point I want to make, don't reckon on this better than expected collections on taxes, because I don't think that is going to realize. That is, of course, is important for coming years. Economic growth this year can maybe easily be around about 3%, but that's a statistical noise because of the very low base, as you've referred to last year. But thereafter, it's going to be extremely difficult for this economy to grow faster than 2%. And the simple reason for that has to do with things like, for example, a lack of electricity. So I'm afraid, I think economic forecast for the Minister of Finance is going to make it very, economic growth forecast is going to be making life very difficult for the Minister to collect the taxes and therefore bringing the deficit down and therefore bringing this the debt to GDP ratio down as well. In fact, I think the debt to GDP ratio in the current financial year, which will only end the end of March, everybody's looking at the next financial year now, and we forget that we're actually still in the current financial year, and that's going to take 2 months before we get the final numbers on this. And the current financial year, I'm afraid things are probably going to look a little bit worse than what the Minister of Finance. So he's starting off on the back foot, on the back foot in a way.
Yeah, because he's talking debt, government debt, GDP stabilizing, Minister's words, not mine, at 88.9% in 2025-26. As we say, that assumes primary surplus, that assumes the growth, and you're saying actually we're going to start missing that number as soon as end of March.
In fact, yes. I think we're in excess of the debt to GDP ratio is over 80% of GDP already. And, you know, there's a lot of noise in that number as well, because we exclude things like an unemployment insurance fund or the actual deficit on many of these different funds. We exclude Eskom. I haven't seen anything in a minister's speech about Eskom, really, that addresses the Eskom issue. So if we include those sort of debts, then we're well above 100% of GDP already. But there's a certain way, there's a convention that we've been following in last, well, forever. And if we stick with the convention, yes, then the debt-to-GDP ratio currently is already over 80%. And I'm afraid we're going to see a fiscal deficit, not 14%, as the minister predicted now in the current financial year. It's probably going to be closer to 15%, and that already accumulates. Everything accumulates over time. And I believe that eventually debt-to-GDP is not going to stabilize at 88%. I think, in fact, it's probably going to go higher than that. The financial markets are doing well at the moment because they see the headline numbers.
Yeah.
The headline numbers are mostly good. And I must tell you, I'm very pleased with things like, for example, the noises that the minister made about taxes and so on. And I'm also pleased to see that he's trying to cut back on some of the current expenditure items. But I think we've left it for too long now. I think we're really over that edge, and really, if we want to stop this runaway train called debt to GDP, we should have done more. Fortunately, we have somebody that Tito Mboweni. I think he's doing an excellent job. Mm-hmm. And what I also must say is that he's a reference to the Constitution. That sounded pretty much presidential. That's something that we must hear from the president, and not when he missed our finance, I think. But difficult circumstances, but good. A couple of very pleasant surprises, but I'm afraid not good enough. I don't think we're going to stop this.
Let me chat to Mr. Siwe in studio with me. We mentioned before the budget around his the October statement, and at that point he had looked at 40 billion in tax increases, and would he withdraw it? Well, he withdrew it. He went a step further. He's essentially hiked tax brackets by 5%. That means if my salary is unchanged, I'm going to actually take a little bit extra cash into my pocket. And he says 2.2 billion a year, mostly to middle lower income earners. I mean, this is in a time of we said COVID is tough. We came into COVID in a recession already. I mean, this is some good news there, even if it does mean he changed what he said back in October.
It is good news when you look at the fact that this is tax that is imposed on individuals,
mm-hmm.
and we are already complaining of unemployment. You know, last year alone, when you look at the reports, they say from April to June, more than 2 million people lost their jobs. By December, more than 4.7 million people had lost their jobs. So that increase in unemployment, it talks to the reduction in pay-as-you-earn that gets collected, you know, which is the biggest contributor to tax revenue. So now him being lenient to the existing tax base, which is actually small, because out of the population of around, I would say, 59 million people, we have, I would say, less than 7 million people that are taxpayers. That's a very small tax base. So you also don't want to upset those people, you know. And when you look at the wealthy, they were already hit very hard in 2017 when he increased that bracket tax rate to 45%,
yeah.
You know. So I didn't expect him to increase the personal income tax. So that increase, which is in line with the inflation rate, it's something that was sort of expected. But again, he didn't touch on the ones that work overseas, because, you know, those ones he would sort of try to discourage people from sort of working elsewhere other than using their skills locally. But he didn't mention anything, meaning there's no increase on the exempt income that there'll be any. But one thing that I realized, because when he spoke, I don't know if that happened to you, Simon, when he touched on corporate income tax, I thought he was saying there's going to be a decrease. But actually, there's no change in corporate income tax. It still stays at 28%. He is actually decreasing it to 27% from the 2023 year of assessment. So he says,
"Oh wow!"
Yes. So he says the corporate income tax will be lowered to 27% for companies with years of assessment commencing on or after 1 April 2022. Meaning that's a 2023 year of assessment. So for the current tax year of assessment and the next tax year of assessment, we are still sitting at 28%. And, you know, this is tax that is levied on profits generated by companies. So, and you must remember, any increase could have sort of deterred foreign investment, because our current tax rate is very high according to mm-hmm. international standards. So although it's something I had gambled, the reduction, if there was a reduction, which we don't have, because now you and I know this is starting from 2023, it was going to stimulate growth and somehow improve economic competitiveness.
And with respect to the minister having to use a horrible phrase, kick the can down the road, he could change his mind in that corporate tax and say, sorry, you know, next year's budget or something. So it's kind of like it's a half-hearted promise. And I mean, the minister's a respectful man. I have no doubt about that. But it's a weird thing to bring in and promise it in a couple of years.
No, that's correct. Because if I can, you know, if I could quote from his speech, he said, we will give consideration to further rate decreases to make our tax system more attractive.
Mm-hmm.
So he could come back next year, you know, and sort of revise what he has said here. Yeah.
Let me move on to Sandile. You mentioned infrastructure in your highlights. He's talking just over 790 billion in infrastructure spending. Infrastructure does two things for an economy, of course. The first is it puts money into the economy, it creates some employment, helps businesses, you know, generate work and therefore revenue and profit. And then, of course, it upgrades an economy, which means we get better roads and ports and the like. So it's an all-round good story. And this is, I mean, it's not really a new story. I remember back, I mean, you know, way it was sort of 2007, the 2008-09 crisis, a lot of talk around infrastructure. From your members and chatting with your members, are you seeing spending happening on the ground? Are you confident that the government has the capacity to spend that infrastructure money?
Well, what excites us more than just the sheer size of this allocation, maybe not allocation, but the expenditure of about 800 billion rands, is the fact that the emphasis is on the private sector partnership.
Yeah.
And our experience tells us that, government is a terrible contractor. And if you look at infrastructure in the energy sector, we still talk about Gusile and Medupi and the amount of malfeasance that happened there, simply because there hasn't been sufficient involvement of the private sector, and even mobilizing private sector capital. So we are very excited about the emphasis on private sector players being brought in to assist in the rollout. And what we also know, because there's a detail of this infrastructure rollout that will have even had a launch of its own sometime last year, is that these infrastructure projects cut across sectors. Some are in water, road, telecoms, energy, and so on. And the fact that also they are spread across the country, and they're even assisting in further integrating the economy of South Africa with that of the region. The diverse nature of these infrastructure projects bring a lot of hope and promise. Again, because investing in infrastructure is investing in the future of the country. When we've got good roads, when we've got well-functioning water supply infrastructure, then you attract those who will latch on that infrastructure, who will be in, the downstream side of the economy. And that's what excites us. I mean, the issue of employment creation cannot be overemphasized, because clearly if you want to bring hope to young people who are graduating, who have got no employment prospects, you really have to hasten the investment in infrastructure.
Yeah, and that is the double win, and I mentioned it up front, is that it's not just potentially giving some employment, in fact a lot of employment to individuals, and it might be low skilled, but truthfully with our current unemployment levels that we were hearing about yesterday, above 30%, anything's better than nothing. But what it also does is it really does benefit that economy. And I remember when Kucho was built down in the Eastern Cape, and people were like, it's a white elephant, but infrastructure, you need to almost build it in advance, and then they will come, in a sense. We're in some places have left our infrastructure, particularly you mentioned sort of water, you mentioned roads. A lot of our rural areas really are being left behind and need that boost, need that pickup.
Absolutely. And the truth of the matter as well is that we cannot shy away from the reality that we are faced with another pandemic called corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he talks about infrastructure rollout in the context of high unemployment rate, and he also talks about a significant allocation towards the Department of Justice, who must help to recover money that was embezzled or stolen, that inspires confidence. You invest in infrastructure for the future of the economy. You are arresting the rot and collecting money that belongs to the state. All of those factors combine towards building greater confidence. So, because it's not just about taxes alone, taxes are important, but what kind of economic order are you creating? And I think when I extrapolate and dissect this budget, it's got all those positive elements that, in my opinion, should inspire confidence in the economy.
Remember, I'm Simon Brown. This is the SAFM Market Update Budget Special Broadcast. I've got Davi Root, Chief Economist at Efficient Group, Sindeli Zungo, who you were just listening to, President of Black Business Council, and Busisiwe Mgletshe. She is CEO of BTMT. Davi, I want to come back to you. The minister implied not an austerity budget. Truthfully, if we exclude compensation of employees, and that's a giant number in of itself, expenditure grows at about an annual 0.4%. That to me, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it felt like a good news-ish sort of budget, but it certainly wasn't expansive. It wasn't sort of being lavish. And I get the point. We're in a corner. We don't have a lot of wiggle room. We look at some of the developed markets around the world throwing money at the problem. We don't have money to throw. We are doing what I think would be certainly a halfway to austerity budget.
No. You're completely and totally wrong. Now, if we only look at the current financial year, for instance, the fiscal deficit will be around about 700 billion rand. Now, a fiscal deficit of that magnitude, about 14-15% of GDP, is the expansionary effect of the fiscus. So the state is highly expansionary. The minister is absolutely correct. This is no austerity budget. This is a highly expansionary budget. Or a bottom line number to look at if you want to determine whether the fiscus is contractory or expansionary, mm-hmm. is simply looking at the debt number. And as long as the debt number goes up relative to GDP, it simply means that the state is pushing more money into the system than what they're taking out of the system. So we have a hugely expansionary budget in South Africa. The Minister of Finance also referred to this, the perception that the state is swimming in cash. And in a way, he's right. And the reason for that is, remember, they always keep some cash balances.
Mm-hmm.
And the cash balances, I don't have the exact number now, and I'm still battling to get all the information about the budget itself. But the cash balances is, we're talking about many, many billions of rands available, cash available to the Minister of Finance. So there is a lot of cash available. But remember, you have to have cash because there are certain expense items that you have to make sure that you have enough money for over the next couple of months. But not only that, you have to pay off certain debt instruments that fall due. It's a continuous process. So what the Minister of Finance has been doing, he's been borrowing more in the capital markets. In fact, today, we are on average borrowing more than 2 billion rand every day on the financial markets. And that's the cash balance. So it doesn't make sense. You don't think for one moment you are rich if you've just borrowed a lot of money from the loan sharks. You're not rich because you have to repay that money sometime in future. But that's the cash balance that the Minister of Finance is referring to. But the Minister is also absolutely right. This is no austerity budget. Austerity budget means that you cut spending, you cut the number of people working for, you close schools, you close hospitals. That is austerity. But this is highly expansionary, and the amount of money, if you look at the fiscal deficit, is in the region of about 700 billion rand.
Mr. Sirwe, let me come back to you. I mean, the two things we expect to see in the budget every year, and we absolutely saw them again this time, fuel levy increase, although not as big as we have seen perhaps in some years, and of course exercise duties. I mean, those are, you can pencil them in, even before the minister starts speaking. We can debate the actual levels, and he gives us the details, but, those are always going to go up, and those are, they're not one of the top three taxes. It's not personal, it's not VAT, it's not corporate tax, but it hurts in the pocket, particularly the fuel levy, because we're traveling. If we have a job, we need to get to our job.
That's correct, Simon. And when you look at fuel levy, this is actually a surcharge that is added to price of fuel, right? So, but unfortunately, we needed to increase it because we need an increase in fiscal revenue.
Mm-hmm.
The increase, it is somehow nominal, considering that it's not going to have that significant impact to the total revenue basket. But again, the large increases in this fuel levy could have had inflationary effects and, of course, increased transport costs, like you've said. And when it comes to excise tax, for me, that is always a soft target.
I mean, it is, but it is a soft target, but it's also an election. I elect to have a whiskey after my dinner or a cigarette.
Yes, because now this tax, you know, since it's imposed on alcohol and tobacco, the whole rationale behind this, because it's also superficial, right? But the whole rationale is to discourage people from smoking,
mm-hmm.
you know, and alcohol abuse. Because, I mean, when you read the budget, the minister says excessive alcohol consumption can lead to negative social and health outcomes. You know, I mean, I remember during the festive season when they said one of the hospitals in Johannesburg had zero patients at ICU.
Chris Hani Baragwanath.
Yes, exactly, because we sort of see a correlation between consumption of alcohol and people being admitted during that time of the year. So I would say there was also an alcohol ban which could have resulted. Actually, it did result to a lot of taxes being foregone, mm-hmm. you know, taxes relating to this excise tax. But you know what is funny? This is meant to be a joke, so you must laugh, Simon, right? So I'm thinking of the president when he delivered his first speech, the president of the country, spoke about this song, Tuma Mina, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the lyrics there, it says, I want to be there for the alcoholics. And yet they always increase this in taxes, you know, the excise tax. But otherwise, what I could have expected maybe was an introduction of excise tax on luxury goods. This is when you import
things,
like perfumes and cell phones. But then when you look at the administrative burden, you know, SARS is still currently trying to chase the existing taxpayers, and you know they have capacity issues. So now an additional administrative burden could have been a challenge for them.
Yeah. I take you on the administrative burden from the SARS perspective, but a luxury tax in a sense is I mean, you know, firstly it's politically palatable because it's taxing the rich and it's rather than the poor, so that goes a long way. And truthfully, you know, the rich with their Gucci bag can't really be complaining about a little bit more. I mean, I imagine it must be something that the minister has probably had a look at and maybe for administrative purposes has decided not this time.
Yes, because you know what, when you look at the rich there, they're currently paying a lot because they...
Fair point, 45%.
45% is a lot, and they pay donations tax, which is what is paid by the riches. They pay dividends tax when they invest and then they earn dividends. They pay dividends tax of 20%. They also pay capital gains tax when they sell their investments, you know. So that is... like, I would call it wealth tax, which is something that has always been debated if we should introduce it or not. But currently, they pay a lot. So at some stage, as much as we have this sort of progressive tax system that the more you earn, the more you pay. But I think let them enjoy their luxury goods.
I see what you're saying, and I think that's probably the way the minister view it, is that in essence we have ourselves a wealth tax already. That is the capital gains tax. That is dividend withholding tax. And we already are taxing the rich at 45% on their take-home pay. So maybe the minister felt that he should sort of step back a little bit and not go too hard. Because the risk, of course, is that folks will emigrate, and then we lose that tax base. I'm Simon Brown. This is the SAFM Market Update Budget Special Broadcast. We're going to be going through to 4 o'clock with my three guests. We've got Davi Root, he is Chief Economist at Efficient Group. We've got Sandile Zunga, who is President of Black Business Council. And in studio, Busisiwe Mglache, she is CEO of BTMK. BMT Capital. We're going to go for a quick news headlines. We'll be back right after the news headlines with more diving deep into the budget. There's still some questions I want to get into. We owe lots of people money. That was the one line. And if there was a true statement in the budget, that was that statement. The African Continental Free Trade Agreement, that certainly looks interesting, but it's very, very early days. And VAT, I mean, the VAT is, again, politically difficult, and we should perhaps go down that road as well, which is, you know, what is, we've got a local government election coming up. How much did that potentially impact some of the decisions that were taken to sort of step off the pedal and not go too strong? But with that, quickly, let's go back to the SAFM studios for news headlines.
SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb.
I'm Simon Brown. This is the SAFM Market Update Budget Special Broadcast. With me, three experts. Davi Root, Chief Economist at Efficient Group. Busisiwe Ngletsheshe, CEO, BTMT Capital. And Sindile Zunga, President, Black Business Council. Davi, I appreciate you need to leave in a bit, so let me come back to you. The line that really stood out for me, debt, we owe lots of people lots of money. I mean, that is ultimately our crux. You mentioned it before the break, where the amount that we're lending, and that my sense is it puts us on a continual back foot. We're constantly having to lend. We're having to lend more every single year, and whilst spending at the same time, it's a hole we're digging. The minister seems to think we stopped digging at some point, but again, he's got some optimistic expectations, perhaps.
Yes, and some people are actually suggesting that we have to increase the debt levels because the other countries are doing that. Unfortunately for us in South Africa, we pay quite a lot of money if we want to borrow money. In fact, I've done a calculation some time ago, and I have to update this, but what you need to do, you have to include the price of money, and in the case of South Africa, it's between 8% and 9% for 10-year money, and also the level of debt. You know, for countries like, for example, Japan, their debt levels are standing at 250%, but they're not paying any interest on that. So it really doesn't matter. And many other countries, the Americans are standing at 1.3%, the Europeans are standing at close to 1%, or to 1.0, and sometimes even below zero in some instances. So we pay a lot of money for borrowing. And the reason why we're paying a lot of money, if we want to borrow money, is simply because the perception is that South Africa is a risky place. And that is, the rating agencies seem to agree with that. And that's the reason why they downgraded that the last couple of years. Maybe I could just make a comment about the debt.
Yes.
And that is that I am quite bullish about South Africa's capital market. And the reason why I am is because of the very, very attractive yields that we offer, but also because we've got a cheap currency. So the entrance for a foreigner is quite cheap. And very importantly, we've got very liquid financial markets. So if a foreigner wants to come in and take a bite out of the cherry, he can do that quite quickly. And I will not be surprised if we see we've seen it, in fact, the last couple of months, substantial inflows, or so-called hot money, portfolio flows into South Africa. And that could continue. So we may even see over the next couple of months, a strengthening of the rand because of that. Unfortunately, but the moment something goes wrong, the opposite happens and the money can leave South Africa again. May I just also make a comment about the indirect taxes that you've been talking just before the break about? And that is, you know, the fuel tax. The fuel tax is actually a very important tax. It's, if I'm not mistaken, the fourth most important tax to the Minister of Finance. It's about 5% of the total tax stake. If I was the Minister of Finance, I would have increased that much more than what he did. And because for various reasons, it's very easy to collect it. It's very cheap to collect it. It's a broad-based tax and all that. I don't think we've got any inflationary issue in South Africa for the next couple of months at least, maybe a little bit longer. So there was an opportunity that I think I very missed. And then the increase in the other so-called sin taxes, I think the minister is playing a dangerous game here. Because we all know during the lockdown you can still get cigarettes with Portuguese warnings on it and things like that and alcohol and all that. So by increasing, and there was a substantial increase in the so-called sin taxes, you are simply making life much, much easier for the illegal trade in cigarettes and in alcohol products and so on. And I think we have to be very careful here. If you don't have proper policing, and we don't have that in South Africa, then you are simply creating a wonderful opportunity and environment for the illegal trade in these products.
Yeah, I take your point on that. Last question for you. I've mentioned local government elections later this year. The pandemic might delay them, but that, you know, the Constitution requires them that they do happen. Did you get a sense that perhaps part of the budget is with an eye to that election? In other words, you know, be careful or not at all?
No, not at all. And I think that's another positive, certainly, is that the Minister of Finance did say, I've given money to the municipalities. They didn't spend the money. They were supposed to spend the money on A, B, and C. You haven't spent the money. I'm going to take the money back. And it's not only the Minister of Finance. We know that Eskom is also putting on pressure on the local authority. So I think that was actually quite a brave political move by the minister to say, listen, you haven't used your money, you're not using your money well, I'm going to take it away because I can use it much better somewhere else.
Yeah.
A good move.
Yeah, and no, I mean, the minister, brave. I mean, no one's ever called Minister Mboweni anything but brave. That's where he is. Davi Rich, Chief Economist at Efficient Group, appreciate you have to leave early. Appreciate your time this afternoon. Sandile Zunga, President, Black Business Council, you mentioned the tourism recovery efforts, just over 500 billion Rand being reprioritized. Tourism, it's one of the sectors. It is truthfully the sector that's been hardest hit by the pandemic in South Africa. It has huge potential for us as an economy, as a job creator. This must be music to the ears to the sector, to your members who are in the tourism space.
Well, absolutely. I think the fund was launched a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So it's nothing new, and the equity contribution from government of just south of 600 billion rands or million rands, and add to that what is being committed from the private sector will make this fund something like 1.2 billion rands. It's a step in the right direction. It's not much. But if you want to bring, it's about bringing promise. This is a moment of a great doom for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Many people see people jumping up and down, the stock markets are increasing. But they're saying we're being left out because we don't even have money to play in the stocks market. The rand is strengthening. They are saying, so what? Because we're unemployed. So once you allocate monies towards the relief funds for the sector where some of the most unskilled are employed, you are beginning to impact positive on the issue of hope. So it is really for that reason that we are saying it's small monies in relative terms, but it's a step in the right direction. And we therefore applaud the minister for even highlighting this as something worthy mentioning in his budget speech. But yes, employment creation is going to happen. Yes, even those geographies which are overlooked in the townships and in the game reserves will get some attention. And for us, it's about elevating the level of hope, and it's about the future endowment for this economy, which has been severely depleted. And so we're picking up on those elements, and we're very heartened by that.
And is it fair to say that and probably in line with construction, I imagine, as well, is tourism has a huge employment multiplier sort of per rand spent. You know, if I start a financial services business, and I'm not dissing the bankers out there, but, you know, my employment levels per rand spent are much lower. In tourism, I get a lot more employment as I do on construction. And again, it comes back to, and, you know, the minister has certainly mentioned it before, we have, let's be honest, an unemployment crisis in our country.
We have a huge crisis of unemployment. And with that, the worsening sense of dignity, when people are unemployed, and the only way they can put something on the table for their families is by queuing at some social grant.
Yeah.
You are impairing their dignity. So these monies that are channeled towards tourism, in our humble opinion, go a long way towards social cohesion and go a long way towards restoring the fabric of our economy in any case. So it's very important that you don't dishearten the entrepreneurs who create employment and who contribute even in minuscule manner towards economic growth. those small numbers, call them small numbers, is those token gestures that we can latch on, because they're very important for restoring hope. So, tourism, very important sector. SME, very important, because even those without much skills can do something in their backyard. Shisanyamas,
yeah.
Car wash the operations in townships. Very important, because that's where people hang out, that's where they spend their monies, and that's where they get a sense that they're actually getting something to give back to their own families, and it's very important.
Yeah.
So the poor must not be left out of this economic play.
Yeah, and the Shisanoma goes from 2 staff to 3 staff. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a 50% increase. That's a third person who, as you say, doesn't need to queue for a social grant, who will pay some tax and spend the money. Busisiwe, let's come back to you. You mentioned taxes on the rich. Capital gains tax for individuals remains unchanged. The inclusion rate is at 40%. The annual exclusion, the deduction, remains at 40,000 rand per year. And exclusion for sale of primary residence remains at 2 million. So there were some, I mean, I always hope that he will lift those a little bit, but in the budget of this year, you know, in a COVID period and the like, he really wasn't going to. I suppose, you know, the sort of other side of the coin is at least he didn't sort of move them against us, but he did leave them unchanged for individual taxpayers.
He did leave them unchanged, but not those taxes not being changed, it doesn't mean that there's a decrease in those taxes, because now you'll be taxed on your current earnings, right? But again, like we said, we've already agreed that this capital gains tax, it's taxing the riches, mm-hmm. Which is something that we said if additional taxes were to be imposed on them, that would sort of maybe force them to leave the country. I guess they're still here because there were movement restrictions and whatnot. But anyway, other than those taxes that were not changed, I had expected that maybe he was going to introduce another tax type, because we are saying there is a challenge of increasing unemployment, right? And unemployment, we said employment triggers mm-hmm. employees' tax, which is the biggest contributor to tax revenue. And when people are employed, they also spend a lot. So that consumer spending has also decreased. And that reduction would lead to, obviously, a decrease in VAT as well, which is the second biggest contributor to tax revenue. So with those challenges and with the tax base that doesn't seem to be increasing, I had thought maybe he could perhaps tax the digital economy. You know, taxing this digital economy is something that was going to bring new taxpayers to the net. You know, we have entities that are not South African-based entities, but they are benefiting from the South African population or consumers. I'm talking of technology companies like Amazon,
sure.
Netflix, mm-hmm. we're talking of Facebook. You know, they operate in a number of countries, including South Africa. So what are we doing with those people? So currently, tax on those companies, it's limited to VAT.
Yeah,
right?
I do pay VAT. I order a book from Amazon or my Netflix. They've caught me on... And let's be clear, I never used to pay VAT on those, but the SARS has got that one closed down. But France has done this, I think, where they've basically said, you know what, Amazon or you know, whoever you might be, these virtual, the Netflix and the like, you operate in our economy, you're charging VAT and paying it back to us, but you're not paying any tax in our economy. Now, Amazon might have a data center or something, but you're suggesting that almost as a couple of percentage points to every digital transaction, which then would flow direct to our revenue rather than to Amazon and ultimately to the U.S. government.
100%, because with VAT, that is something that is, it's easy, because you are consuming these services here in South Africa, because VAT is clear. It just says, irrespective of who's providing the service, as long as consumption is in South Africa, then VAT is imposed. And in a way, the government, by so doing, they're trying to discourage South Africans from importing but consume locally. So it wouldn't make sense to have local services being more expensive than the imported one. But then when it comes to introducing maybe another sort of tax rate in order to charge more taxes on these entities, The challenge is now South Africa generally likes to align its initiatives to OECDs, these organizations for economic cooperation and development, because they normally set out the single set of rules that are used globally. But now we must remember South Africa is not a first world country. So now those OECD measures might not benefit South Africa. So another option then would be to sort of withhold this tax before these entities get their money, right? But applying that withholding tax could be a challenge, because then we need to have bilateral tax agreements, you know, which is something that might take a while. But again, I was looking at, you know, last year the president was talking about this commission, the 4IR. You know, everyone's talking about 4IR.
Yeah, Fourth Industrial Revolution.
That 4IR commission. That commission, last year it suggested some three tax changes, and one of them was, they said, this digital tax for international technology companies, I think, which is what we've just mentioned now, this Amazon, Facebook and Netflix and other entities. But another one which I like, which they suggested, they said maybe a proposal of allowing startups, you know, people who start small businesses that render or services that relate to digital economy, whereby they get tax incentives on research and development. So when they do that, then we get to consume locally, because then we'll have alternatives rather than importing these services. And again, they mentioned an issue of tax structure, so on processed minerals used in 4IR components. So he didn't touch on this, so perhaps it's something that he's going to talk about when in October, when he's delivering his medium-term budget speech, because these are proposals that have already been put in place by this 4IR commission.
I'm Simon Brown. This is the SAFM Market Update Budget Special Broadcast. My guests, both on the line, Sindile Zungu, he is President, Black Business Council, and Busisiwe Mglentshe, she is CEO, BTMT Capital. Sindile, if I come back to you, the Minister mentioned briefly the African Continental Free Trade Agreement kicked in earlier this year. You and your members at the Black Business Council, I mean, this is early days, and it's something which will take, truthfully, a number of years, if not decades, to really sort of fulfill its promise. But do you look at the African Continental Free Trade with something that holds a high level of promise for not just our economy, but for our neighboring countries as well?
It's probably one of the most important and significant introductions within the continent in the last decades that happened just last year. And the fact that the Secretary General of the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement is South African should make us even more excited that when we talk about the integration of South Africa's economy into the rest of the continent in a meaningful way, here is a framework for that. And the numbers are quite obvious. South Africa is an economy of, let's say, circa 60 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And Africa, including North Africa, is in excess of 1 billion people. All the reason why South African companies should be excited about unlocking those markets for their goods and services. And this obviously is a step towards that outcome. We are very excited about it. As you correctly say, Simon, it's going to take a while before its benefits are fully realized. But as long as we set an allocation, like 148 million rands towards this effort, so the African Nations International Cooperation Fund and the FCTA as well, getting a significant allocation. It's all steps in the right direction, because when you grow the economy and high unemployment levels, you want to make sure that if Africa is seen as a new frontier for global business, that we also take full advantage of that. And this African Continental Free Trade Agreement, we see it in that context. So we are quite excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, the idea, to me, it fills me with delight. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful initiative. You mentioned energy, you mentioned Eskom. We got some more state-owned enterprise support, another $31.7 billion to Eskom, $3.5 billion to SAA, $7 billion to essentially recapitalize the land bank. Eskom expected to be unbundled, to have that completed by December next year. The Eskom, we know, I mean, there's two sides to that equation. One is the inability to supply continuous reliable power, and the other is charging, you know, a lot more as we, for the power they can supply, another 15.6% increase coming. Eskom is perhaps, in a country full of challenges, getting Eskom right has to be one of our top three challenges for the government, for the minister, and you know, making it easy so that we don't worry about supply as a business, as a country.
It surely remains one of our key priorities. Think about it. If you want to rebuild South Africa's industrial capacity, mm-hmm. or build South Africa's industrial capacity for new challenges, and without certainty of a reliable power supply, just forget it. And if Eskom is going to be too expensive, again, just forget it, because there are many other the geographies and locations which are competing for that capital investment. So it's very important that Eskom is gotten right, mm-hmm. And that even the tariffs, the increases are granted to it, are not by default, creating a situation where Eskom is shooting its own foot. Because people are going to basically go off-grid because it's just too expensive. What you don't want to happen is that Eskom is recovering money through the greater tariffs, but it's making alternative energy, the renewables in particular, a lot more affordable. And when Eskom is not a major player in that space. So our view is get Eskom right, then talk about building this country's industrial capacity. But at the same time, make sure that just transition is attained with greater participation by the renewables, whether it's wind or solar or hydro, or even nuclear for that matter, over time, whilst at the same time taking full advantage of the existing generational capacity that is in Eskom, which is thermal coal.
Yeah, and as you said, that the challenge is that as prices go up and uncertainty about generation or supply, we start moving off-grid, and that then perpetuates the Eskom problem. Sindile Zungo, President, Black Business Council. Sir, I really do appreciate your time this afternoon. Coming to my last two questions for Mr. Siwe, who's still with me in studio. We got a sliver of carbon tax, sugar tax.
Oh, sugar tax. sugar tax, remember this is the health promotion levy.
Yeah.
How this starts at the Minister of Finance together with the Minister of Health, they both decided. The Minister of Finance said, I need to increase my revenue. And the Minister of Health said, I'm tired of people being hospitalized because, you know, they're consuming a lot of beverages that have high level of sugar content. So, therefore, this tax or this levy is imposed on sugar sweetened beverages. You know, now when it started, there was people were not affected. The consumption was not affected by the increase in the price of these sugar sweetened beverages. So you look at this elasticity of demand, which was not mm-hmm. influenced by the price increase, right? But then now what we are seeing is sugar tax has decreased, you know, looking at the two previous years, it's decreased by around 3 billion rand. So this tells you that now consumers are becoming more health conscious, you know. So which means then that the Minister of Finance could be losing, but at least the Minister of Health is benefiting.
I was going to say, so we're winning, but there might be a gap for the Minister of Finance to slip a little bit more in.
Yeah. But otherwise, at the end of the day, we want people's lives to be in good shape, right? So again, there's something that I thought of, which, like estate duties, right? Mm. Estate duties, they didn't touch on them, but we already have huge rebates on estate duties. So this is tax that is payable on estates of every person when they die, you know, when their net estate is up in excess of 3.5 million rand. So you take your assets, less liabilities, and then anything above 3 million rand gets taxed at 20%. So we didn't touch on that. And again, we said that is part of wealth tax, you're taxing the riches. And I don't think it would have made any impact as such, because we are also talking of people who could have sort of sought tax havens if this was increased.
Last, what I always look for when I listen to the minister giving a budget over the many years I've listened to is that tax by stealth. In other words, he didn't change the capital gain changes, but of course inflation's running at, call it 4%, so truthfully I'm probably going to pay a little bit more. But on the flip side, we got a benefit from the income tax brackets rising by some 5%, which, as you indicate, is pretty much in line with inflation. My sense of this, there was a little bit of tax by stealth, but truthfully, not very much, which again is kudos to the minister, because I always feel that that's a bit of a nasty way to tax us.
It is. But I think when it comes to tax rates and increasing taxes, what has been established now is we do have a lot of taxpayers, you know, that are either in the system or that needs to be brought into the system. I think the challenge should be, or the support should be given to SARS, you know, to strengthen their controls. And I liked it when he mentioned it himself, you know. So I think we should, this budget, I felt that it made a strong statement, you know, on the measures that needs to be taken by SARS to make sure that those who are operating in the illicit economy, they need to declare, you know, and submit. And people need to be compliant. And being compliant means you register when you are expected to register for tax, when you've reached a certain threshold, and you submit your tax returns when they are due, and over and above that, you pay when the payment is expected. So you'd find a lot of businesses just registering because they need tax clearance certificate, but they forget about submitting and paying.
They do the first one because suppliers are, where's your tax clearance, and then they don't actually ever submit. We'll leave it there. My guests today have been Davie Root, Chief Economist at Efficient Group, Sandile Zunga, President of Black Business Council, and Busisiwe Magletra, she is CEO BTMT Capital. Markets, the Rand is back at 14.55, pretty much where we started the day after a dip down to 14.39. The overall market is now 0.8% up. It was up 1.5% earlier, so we have come back a bit. My name is Simon Brown. This has been the SAFM Market Update Budget Special Broadcast. Huge thanks to my team here at MoneyWeb and the team back at the SAFM studios. Time for news.